So I've got Gujarati, English, Swahili in my language. So I don't know what my identity, but I think at heart I am an Indian. But because I live in Britain, I am also very loyal to British identity. And I like being called as a British Indian.
Hello, and welcome to the final episode of this oral history podcast series produced for Academy's Heritage Project and funded by the National Lottery Heritage Fund. As part of this multi-layered project, which began in November 2020, Academy has worked with three schools across London and Cambridge to deliver a series of oral history workshops to students aged 8 to 21. In this episode, we'll showcase some of the clips of oral histories gathered by students from Pugrov Dance Company. Our workshops were held on Zoom, where the students worked alongside other students from Sanskriti School of Dance to explore themes of migration, culture, identity, and diaspora. One of the key themes that emerged from many of these interviews was how the interviewees remained in touch with their Indian heritage from across the globe. In this episode, we'll hear from people who have lived in Asia, Africa, and the UK, and used traditions, prayer, and music to connect with their South Asian heritage. Sahini's mum was born and grew up in the UK and attended a boarding school which was made up predominantly of white children. In that interview, Sahini wanted to learn more about any challenges she faced in this environment. She also talks about the first time that she discovered she could connect with her Indian heritage here in the UK.
What were your experiences of growing up in a British society, and how do you think, or do you think, that society has changed from when you were a kid to where we are now?
100%, because when I was in boarding school, it was like I was probably one or two brown girl in the whole school. Majority of them were in Caucasians or African, and there were ex-army children, or you know, in the armed forces, etc. And they were so ignorant of where India was, what Indians were about. And they used to say things like, oh, do your grandparents live in mud huts? Do they have tigers as pets? And that's the culture they were being taught by maybe their grandparents or their English heritage upbringing. So that's when I was, 10. So you're talking about in the late 80s. I actually said to my dad in the playground in my primary school that my friend was going to Saturday school, where she was learning Gujarati, playing the harmonium, sitar, dancing to Bharatanatyam and Kathak. And so I was really intrigued where she was going. It was a school in Wembley. So I said to my dad, can you speak to her dad? Get the form, and I want to go to that school. And that's where my first passion for Kathak started. I went to Logan Hall and I saw the teacher, Aldna Sangupta, she performing with her students in their showcase, and that was something that I thought, wow, never seen that before. But obviously, as children, and anyone that was born in the 70s and 80s would know, Bollywood films were as a big influence in our culture of dance, music, and trying to learn to speak Hindi, etc. So anyway, so my dad did get me enrolled, and yeah, it was really good. On Saturday from 9 in the morning till about, I think it was 3:30, 4 o'clock, it was full-on day of our Indian culture. Okay, so obviously, like I said to you, the Gujarati class was a big influence for me. I'm 44, not many people my age can actually read and write Gujarati, so I'm quite proud to say that. When I go to India, I feel like I'm at home, yet I'm not born in India. And because the culture has been within our family, we have religion, faith, and faith has played a big part in my growing up. Yes, before, when we were young, we were just told, yes, you've got to do puja, yes, you've got to do divo, you've got to do that. And we weren't really questioning why and what were the rationales behind all of that. We did it because our grandparents did it and our parents did it. But as I've got older, even I question certain rituals that we do. But I think it's still important because our faith has always taught us, our religion, Hinduism, is said it's a way of life.
Shaylee's mum, Lata, was born to Indian parents in Kenya, then moved to India when she was 12. She then migrated to the UK in the early 1980s, just before she got married. Her parents' strong ties to Indian culture in Africa meant that she and her five sisters remained in touch with their Indian heritage. In this clip, it's really interesting to hear about her connections to India throughout her life and how the different places she's lived play into her identity.
Even though we were living in Africa, it never occurred to us that we were away from India. So they had very strong ties with India, and all the cultural activities used to be celebrated in one of the best ways, I would say, Diwali, Navratri, any other religious events, music, dance, you name it. And my parents were always there participating. And we used to be part of that whole network of the Indians in Kenya. My school life in Kenya also was very interesting because even though we used to live in Africa, my parents always used to feel that we should remain engaged with India. And when the Asians settled in Kenya, they built lots of schools, and these schools all used to offer mother tongue languages. Gujarati was quite so my school was called Visa Oshwal Primary School. So Oshwals are this Jain community who came from Gujarat to Africa. And in that school, we used to be taught everything about India, even languages. I learned all my alphabets, Gujarati alphabets in the school, and also religion, about Gujarati religion as well, all our cultural things as well. So I think the school was very, very good experience for us, and majority of the students were all Indians at that time.
Do you feel like you would have counted yourself as a young Indian girl, or do you think you would have, like, the African side of it, did that ever come into play?
Absolutely. I think I have always been brought up as an Indian. My mom used to be a housewife. She was bringing up six daughters. So there was no question. And she herself was very traditional. So the whole upbringing was very Indian. And I would not say I had ever thought that I was an African.
Did you used to speak Swahili?
Yes, we were taught Swahili at school, obviously, and we used to have lots of maids and servants in the house as well with whom we used to speak in Swahili. So I remember quite a bit of Swahili even now.
Vaishali's mum also spent her early years in Kenya and was excited to move to the UK when her father's work was transferred here. School was very different in the UK. And she, like many others, dealt with these challenges by connecting with her Indian heritage through her family and cultural events.
What was your first reaction when you were told that you were migrating to the UK?
It was very exciting. We were in India at the time, and my dad heard that, you know, his transfer had been approved because he worked for Barclays Bank in Nairobi in Kenya. And he got a transfer here to the UK. So it was exciting to venture a new country. And as in those days, I think coming to England was like very exciting for everyone. And it seemed like a way forward in life.
What was it like making friends in a new school? Did you miss your old friends in your old school?
Yes, having left Kenya, it was hard because some of the friends that I bonded with, it was difficult because you felt like, oh, am I ever going to see them again? And making friends in this school here, initially, it was difficult, but then after I settled in, it became a lot easier making friends, and the English people were quite interested knowing my background, where I came from and why I came here. And when I used to talk about the life in Kenya, they found that very interesting. And it was like exciting for them to hear about the outdoor life and, you know, how close, as we were so close to the game reserves and everything. So it was nice for them to hear about the different adventures I'd had.
How did you maintain your cultural background in the UK, especially having all white friends?
Yeah, because having all white friends, it was difficult. The only, as far as maintaining the culture with friends, it was difficult. You had to adapt to the English way of socializing. But being, and then at home, it would, again, you know, be very cultural. We still, you know, had all the cultural outgoings and gatherings, and we used to have a lot of people visiting us at home. So we spoke Gujarati quite fluently at home as well with my parents. So we maintained our culture, and also attending social events, Navratri, celebrating Diwali with friends and family.
Throughout all of the interviews, it became clear that family is so important in traditions and culture around the world. Sia's interview with her grandparents, in which her Ba speaks Gujarati, shows the importance of family as they talk about their excitement when they found out they were going to be grandparents for the first time and how they gave sweets to Sia's parents. She also talks about how family and friends celebrated back in India by giving sweets to each other, which shows the strong bond between family here in the UK and back home in India.
What is your favourite thing about being a grandparent?
પછી અમારો ગોપાલ આવ્યો, ગોપાલ નું જેમ સિયા નું કર્યું સેમ થિંગ બધે નું કર્યું અમે. ઇન્ડિયામાં બધું બધાની માટે બધો અહીંયા તાપ્યું ભાઈ ઇન્ડિયા આપ્યું. અમને જે પસંદ હોય એવા અને લગ્ન કરે, વેરી હેપી ઓલ ઓફ ધેમ, ફોર ઓફ ધેમ, યે ગોપાલ, સાક્ષી, સિયા, વૈદેહી. અમે તો બહુ બહુ આશા રાખી કે અમારા છોકરા ફાઇન રીતે બાપુને ભજે અને અમારું માન રાખે અને બસ છોકરા સારા ઘરમાં જાય અને છોકરા સારા જોઈને ગોતે ને. આઈ એમ વેરી હેપી.
યા ઓલવેઝ 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 થ્રુ યોર કૃપા.
યે
એન્ડ દાદા?
દાદા
યે સેમ થિંગ.
Krishma's father, Pradeep, moved to the UK from Tanzania in 1974. When he was younger, Pradeep's parents used his grandfather's name as his surname in his passport. This meant he was incorrectly known as Mr. Dungy in his job in the UK. Here, he tells Krishma about what life was like when he first migrated to England and tells the story of what happened when he changed his name.
In terms of finding accommodation, that wasn't too difficult. Usually, people in those days, like there were very few Asians or Indians around in those days, but mainly, say, a community from Uganda where I used to first live in, it was in Neasden. There were quite a few Gujaratis there, but it was just like word of mouth. My grandfather's name was Danji. And when I started in this blinds trade, the first company, they used to call me as Mr. Danji. I used to find it very awkward because if somebody addresses you as Mr. Danji, and I say, well, that's my grandfather's name. My name is Pradeep, but that's not my surname. But, well, that's what, when I was told that when you register names with companies and people like that or such places like that, always make sure that it corresponds with your names in your passport. So that's what I used to give out in official paperwork. And so obviously I became known as Mr. Danji. And then before I was getting married, or before I got married, I changed it to Gajar, which is what it is. It's the family name, but they thought, well, it must be our culture for the men to change the name when you get married. So they used to laugh at me. And I said, no, that's not the case.
Phoebe's grandmother moved to the UK in 1975, but returned to India in 1982. Here, she talks about how she felt when she arrived, as she recognised shops after reading English books. She also spoke English well, meaning that she was approached to teach English to her Indian friends' children.
I was quite fascinated when I reached there to see all the place names come alive, all the shops. I knew the names of the shops, like Woolworths, Marks & Spencer's, Boots, and Piccadilly, all these seemed so familiar. All the towns looked familiar. But it was because of my reading all these English books that they didn't seem strange to me at all. You know, like it was not a cultural shock kind of thing, you know. I felt myself, you know, recognizing things. And since I could speak English, and I, because of our background in our school and the parents encouraging us to speak, I found I could communicate quite well, actually. Certain children come to me, some of my Indian friends' children, they would come to me for English, for learning English, because they found that I could explain better than they could really follow. So I had one young girl come to me, and then I had two other young boys coming, you know, and I would explain and talk to them about their lessons, you know, give them guidance. That way, helping children, but not really in part of a school one.
When you did come to England and while you were staying here, did you ever face any racism?
Well, the year just before I came to England, quite a lot of Asians had come to England as immigrants, because where they were staying, and they had British passports, and quite an influx of people came in. So it was not like a gradual flow of people coming in, quite a lot. So when I was there, I did come across incidents when there were, you know, racial jibes, etc. But we took it in our stride, we ignored it, because there was no point in confronting anybody about it. It's just one of those things they had to, because it's all part of the empire, you know. Like when they had the British Empire, people were given privileges like British passports and stuff, and allowed to come in and work. They needed skilled people. So when people did come in, there was a slight resentment, you know, initially. But I think now it's more multicultural than it used to be at that time.
It's been really great to hear the fascinating and unique stories from all of the interviewees involved in this heritage project. We hope that these oral histories inspired the students to learn more about their culture, family and community history, as well as sharing these stories with you in this podcast. Our workshops were held online via Zoom during the COVID-19 pandemic, Some of the interviews were also conducted online in accordance with COVID-19 guidelines. Thank you for listening to this episode of Academy's Oral History Podcast. To find out more about the project and Academy's work creating, commissioning and nurturing South Asian dance in the UK, please visit www.academy.co.uk. Once again, thank you to our funders, the National Lottery Heritage Fund, and to Parbhuti from Pagrav Dance Company for all your hard work and support throughout the project. Thank you also to the students who joined me on Zoom on Sunday mornings for our workshops.